You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Unions have historically united workers in a particular workplace or sector and fought for gains for their members. In earlier times, these benefits were eventually passed on to other workers who didn't have the protection of a union. But Michael Hurley and Sam Gindin argue that those days are past. They say the current economic crisis have given business elites the opportunity to demand concessions across the board, not just in individual workplaces and unions. And the focus of their attacks is on the last remaining stronghold of unionism, public sector workers. Michael Hurley is president of the Ontario Council of Hospital Unions, a division of CUPE. Sam Gindin is a retired former assistant to the president of the Canadian Auto Workers. Both are members of the Greater Toronto Workers' Assembly. Michael Hurley joins me on the line this morning from Toronto. Hello, Michael.
Hi.
Why are public sector unions under attack right now?
Well, we've gone through a long period where the working class in general has been under attack. For poor people, people on social assistance, generally speaking, they're mired where they were 20, 25 years ago. People who transit to unemployment insurance, their benefits have been cut. Had stagnation in the minimum wage, generally speaking. We have private sector workers, lots of job losses in British Columbia, for example, and in the pulp and paper industry and mills, and workers in private sector have been pushed into giving concessions, and lots of people have lost their jobs. We have high unemployment, and so the largest remaining unionized group is the public sector, and increasingly public sector workers stand out because relative to the rest of the working class, we have decent wages and we have pensions, and that makes us increasingly vulnerable to attacks from those who've already attacked with a lot of success much of the rest of the working class.
Now, of course, the government is not out there saying we're attacking the public sector workers, so how are they reframing this quite radical change in Canadian society?
Well, I think you can see it, you see it play out in Great Britain at the moment. That's a good place to look at the austerity agenda unfolding. You have deep, deep cuts to public sector spending and the closure of many, many services, libraries, daycare centers, long-term care facilities, etc. Lots of deep cuts to municipal government. 600,000 public sector workers losing their jobs. So you've got this attack on the state and on state public services. On the one hand, huge layoffs of public sector workers, and at the same time, a deliberate attack also on the entitlements for British public sector workers on their wages. Looking for double-digit wage cuts and looking for significant changes to their pension plan. In the case of Britain, the public sector workers have chosen to mount their strike activity on the battlefield of their entitlements, which is a battlefield that the French workers fought and lost on a couple of years ago. We would argue, I think, that a more successful and important battleground would be the battleground in defending public sector services. That's where strikes or other creative job actions would enjoy public support, because there's lots of support in Britain to keep libraries open and local daycare centers, etc. There's tons of public support for that, and a success on a battlefield like that might give public sector workers the impetus to be successful in pushing back on the entitlements. We have to look after the services is really our message.
If the way that the government is currently attacking private sector public sector workers, if their sort of restructuring around this succeeds, what's that going to look like in terms of public services?
Well, I think the goal is the dismantlement of the state and public sector services as we know it, and the commodification of all of those services. So, including healthcare and including education, You know, so I think the thinking is that in the, you know, in the modern world, corporations will deliver these services, and public services are an anachronism. Unfortunately, you know, privately delivered for-profit services have proven to be hugely more expensive. And, you know, in the case of the sector where I'm from, which is healthcare, you know, there was an article in the Canadian Medical Association Journal just a few years ago showing higher death rates in for-profit hospitals and dialysis clinics in the United States compared with not-for-profits because, among other things, the for-profit operators skimped on blood cleaning products in the case of dialysis and on the use of qualified staff in the case of the hospitals. There are many services for which the market model is completely inappropriate and wrong, and many of those services are currently offered now in the public sector.
You're arguing for a new stance by unions. What would that look like if unions were then to adopt a different strategy for defending public services?
Well, we give examples of, for example, what might that look like in a labor dispute? Let's say a labor dispute around a transit situation. Well, that might look like instead of the workers withdrawing their services, which means that lots of members of the working class can't get to work, that the transit operators simply refuse to collect fares and let everybody run for free, ride for free. I mean, there, you know, in the case of the healthcare sector, we're suggesting other creative alternatives. I think there needs to be some thought given to the tactics that the labor movement uses in its disputes, because they actually drive away public support, and that undermines the dispute in the long run. And we're arguing for unions to switch their emphasis over to defense of the services.
I'm noticing also that there's a less well-paid workers. There seems to be kind of a pitting of worker against worker by the governments and business to kind of say, well, these people are well-paid. Do you think that's a correct perception?
Absolutely. I think it's, you know, hugely ironic that the financial sector that precipitated this financial crisis and you know, that is awash in multimillionaires and very rich people who are, you know, profiting enormously. We've seen an enormous wealth transfer between, you know, the well-to-do and working people. And I do think class divisions are played up. And of course, somebody's making $10 an hour and doesn't have benefits or guaranteed hours of employment and probably doesn't have a pension plan, you know, might think that a worker who makes, you know, $18 an hour and has a pension plan and gets 37 and a half hours a week of work is a privileged person and can't understand why they might be asking for more. And it's the failure of the union movement to organize those workers and to raise their standards of living. It's the self-centeredness of the labor movement to this point that you know, that's created the possibility for that to emerge. And we're arguing that we have to do something about that. The labor movement has to organize these people. It has to give them hope about their future. Their pleasure should not come from watching, members of the working class who have been able to achieve gains be pushed back into poverty. Their hope and pleasure should come from seeing real increases in their standards of living and having hope that that would continue into the future.
What do unions need to address that's going to counteract that lack of solidarity that they've had with unorganized workers?
Well, we need a huge shift of priority. First of all, the unions, I think, are quite complacent. In the private sector, unions were quite complacent, I think, 30 years ago, before the onset of free trade and the devastation that it's created. I think, you know, the unions are quite complacent and, haven't turned their minds to the nature of the extent of the change that needs to take place in order for us to to have hope as a labor movement. And, you know, that means different priorities in organizing. That means organizing in a different way, not in a competitive way, but cooperatively. It means rethinking our, you know, the use of the roles of staff and activists in our union. You know, it means taking an honest and hard look at how democratic we actually are internally and how effectively we're communicating with our members and whether we're mobilizing them in support of services. We have to look at whether the structures in our unions actually have capacity, you know, the capacity to defend the members at the workplace, but also in the sector and across the public sector. You know, and I think union leaders need to relinquish some of the control that they've accrued. You know, it isn't only the you know, the neoliberalism has you know, has been absorbed internally in the unions as well.
Now, your own union's been working with the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty recently. What kinds of activities has the Ontario Council of Hospital Unions been involved with?
Well, QP has funded, you know, our provincial union, QP Ontario, to do work with the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty to try to do a lot of popular education with our members about social assistance. In Ontario, social assistance is at the rate it was at, you know, in the mid-90s. It's, you know, $580 a month for a person, a single person. And the provincial government has just cut a special diet program that provided, you know, dietary supplements, et cetera, for people with medical conditions like HIV or diabetes. You know, despite the fact that three-quarters of the people on social assistance are women or children, there's this ingrained stigmatism that, you know, we're talking about people who are lazy and don't want to work. You know, speaking of those, like, class divisions, looking the other way now. In Ontario Council of Hospital Unions, we're trying to do some work with healthcare practitioners against poverty and other groups, Ontario Health Coalition, around the impact of poverty on health outcomes. You know, the government, on the one hand, is eliminating a special diet program for people who have chronic medical conditions, and on the other hand, we know that the impact of you know, failing to feed a diabetic properly will be amputations or other very expensive medical interventions requiring a lot of rehabilitation, you know, down the road. So we're trying to do some education with our own members and also trying to raise the issues politically. We're also helping to do a film about the people who are losing the special diet, because reading about it or being told the numbers doesn't have the impact of seeing somebody in their home and looking at practically speaking what it means to live in poverty. But those are areas that we're working on. I mean, I have to be honest with you, we're just starting this project. You know, we've ignored poverty for many years, and we're just getting to it.
Michael, one of the tactics that you mentioned in your article is something called a work-in rather than a walk-out. What's that?
Well, you know, hospital employees, you know, the ones that we represent are, you know, in a position where the withdrawal of labor, you know, can have, you know, a negative, serious impact on supporting people to get better. People, generally speaking, I think, find it hard to get their heads around a work stoppage that has as its goal making you know, the healthcare system more effective. So, you know, we're toying with the idea. We've agreed to experiment with a work-in, which is where we ask all of the workers who are off work on a given day, on vacation or whatever, to come to work, and you know, we demonstrate what quality care would look like. We talk about the kind of cuts to staff, to beds, and to services, and we make the case, you know, perhaps from a more sympathetic soapbox, that there need to be additional resources put into the healthcare service. So, to be frank with you, though, it's met with a lot of skepticism by local activists. That's why we're piloting it, because, you know, people don't believe that they should work for free. They don't believe that they should work on their time off. They have a hard time getting their head around the tactic.
Well, it's a lot of food for thought there, I think, with a lot of the things that you've talked about this morning. Thanks for writing the article, and thanks for talking with me this morning.
Well, thanks so much for having me on.
Okay. Bye now, Michael.
Take care. Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with Michael Hurley. He's the president of the Ontario Council of Hospital Unions, a division of CUPE. He's author with Sam Gindin of a recent article on union response to the attack on public services, and it was first published in the Socialist Project's e-bulletin, The Bullet. You can find a link from our webpage at coopradio.org/redeye.